For more than 100 years, radio has been a tool, a lifeline, a constant companion. Over the last few weeks, I've been scratching the surface of what radio in its various forms means to us with islanders who've devoted themselves to this unique medium. Our conversation continues today with presenter and producer at Manx Radio, Ben Hartley. Ben, radio has been a lifelong love for you. Can you remember the kinds of things that you used to listen to when you were younger?
Yeah, it was Radio 2, I think, that first started my interest, because back in the day, they used to do all the sport on Radio 2. This was before the days of Five Live. So on a Saturday afternoon, I was a big football fan, particularly as a youngster. So as a sort of 7, 8-year-old, used to listen to Sport on 2, where they'd have all the results coming in. They'd do the second half commentary. The great Peter Jones, who was a sort of legendary football commentator. Alan Green was just coming to the fore around that time as well. So I think that is what first piqued my interest, and I just used to love the excitement that they would build, and they'd cross to another ground, another game where there'd just been a goal, and the excitement and all of that that they used to create with that, I think, was where it all first started.
But you're also quite a news fan. You wanted to be a newsreader when you grew up.
Yeah, that's it. I think it was either a newsreader or a sports commentator, because I used to love watching the news on the TV and all the news themes and the way they would do the headlines and the introductions. I really should have got out more as a child. Really should have done. But I was fascinated by that. And I think, again, it's that communication of how they communicated the news, the way in which they would do that. So yeah, I used to love all that. So that was very much an ambition of mine, was to be a news reader or a sports commentator. I think to have been a football commentator. It's interesting how things go, because of course I don't work on sport at all now or read the news. But initially, in those early years, those were definitely the big goals for me.
The magic behind radio and television was also of great interest to you.
Yeah, I was absolutely fascinated when I first came to Manx Radio. I loved learning about how, you know, speaking into this microphone now, the process of what happens between this microphone and people listening on the radio at home, and the technology that's involved, all the transmitters. And of course now, what is so interesting is the whole advent of the internet over the last 20, 25 years, and the fact that at one time, if you wanted to listen to Manx Radio, you had to have an actual radio, you had to be within range of a transmitter, wherever that might have been. And of course, that varied, particularly with our AM 1368. Some nights particularly, that would go very, very far. FM obviously had a shorter range. But now with the internet, you know, we can have people listening anywhere in the world. And smartphones now as well. It's not just that you have to have a computer sort of fixed in your home. You can listen to us literally anywhere with the smartphone technology. So again, it's all absolutely fascinating. It's not just the sort of the broadcasting side. It is all the technology behind it that has, yeah, always really interested me.
And talking of transmitters, it was sort of the lucky dip almost of what you could pick up when and where. I remember you telling me a little story about when you first got a car. Yeah. And it just enabled you to listen to so much more on the radio.
This is, again, I was getting out in these days, but I should have been doing something more productive, I'm sure. But yeah, when I first had a car, you could go to certain parts of the island if you were up high and pick up radio stations from across the water. So the west side of the island, you could pick up stations from Ireland and Northern Ireland. Cool FM from downtown Belfast was something you could pick up in Peel. If you headed to the east side of the island, you could pick up radio stations like, on a good day, Radio City from Liverpool, BBC Merseyside, BBC Cumbria, BBC Lancashire, Rock FM, and even good old Radio Wave in Blackpool. So yes, this was always a big thing to go and try and listen to other stations. And that's interesting again, because now you could just literally sit here, get your phone out and listen to any one of those stations and any station around the world. But in those days, you did used to have to travel a bit higher up somewhere. The Cregna Bar, Conrennie Way was good to pick up those radio stations from across in England. But again, it's how technology has changed.
When I drive over the mountain, occasionally we'll get some Welsh language programmes mixing in with what we're listening to. It's still quite exciting to think that even in this day and age, That's still how it works. Radio essentially is still, it's still the same technology. And we can still sort of pick up different parts of different people's lives from around Britain, around the world even.
Yeah, it's twofold, because it's great that you can just listen on your phone to any particular station. But it is wonderful, like you say, if you're driving around and sometimes the traffic reports will come in from BBC Ulster as I'm driving back towards Peel, often sort of coming down the Arch Allegan there. If you time it right, you'll get their reports coming in. So that's great. Still that old-fashioned way of picking up radio. But whatever form, be it listening on an old-fashioned transistor or via your smartphone or iPad or whatever the new technology is, it is still about that communication. And for me, that's what it will always be about. No matter how you listen, it's that communication between the person in the studio and the person listening at home.
You're listening to The Power of Radio with me, Sarah Hendy, where we're exploring what radio really means to us. There are few people who better appreciate the true power of radio than former head of programming and current presenter of Greatest Hits at Manx Radio, Mark Tiley. His career with the British Forces Broadcasting Service took him to many parts of the world during troubled times, producing and presenting such programmes as Two-Way Family Favourites.
My relationship with that programme was very brief, because even though it was in the 80s, yeah, it must have been the early 80s, the programme was sort of on the wane even then. It was at its height, I guess, in the 60s. But the main thing was that you couldn't phone up and you couldn't really expect a letter quickly to get to your friends and family from overseas. It took ages. I'll give you an example. My first job with BFBS, British Forces Broadcasting Service, was in Cyprus. And if I wanted to phone up friends and family, I had to book a phone call. And you couldn't just necessarily get it that day. And come Christmas, you'd all be booking them. You'd have a 10-minute slot and you'd go to the phone and the operator would say, "We'll put you through now." And it was that basic. So how different is that from today?
I mean, infinitely different. Yeah. It's a different world, isn't it? But what that must have meant to the people at home whose loved ones are overseas serving, you must have witnessed some really special connections in that job.
Definitely. And going back to the Two-Way Family Favourites thing, it still had a lot of clout. It didn't have the 20-plus million figure that it had in the 60s. It was by far the biggest, most listened to radio programme in Britain, certainly. But a message meant a lot and a request meant a lot. And the idea of saying it with a record of your choice was very, very special. And especially at holidays and birthdays and Mother's Day and Valentine's Day. And the choice of records were fantastic. And we were always, as producer-presenters, hoping that we'd get a bit of a spread of songs and not the usual culprit. So it was always good when somebody chose something a little bit different from the I Love You Because or whatever. And that would help the BBC schedule it. And the way it worked is, if you were the London presenter and I was in Cyprus, you'd have your records and I'd have my copies, because the quality of the line wasn't good enough. You had to broadcast your own record locally, and they'd broadcast their own copy of the disc in London. And you had to make sure they went at the same time, and sometimes there were different versions, and you were trying to make sure they ended at the same time. So it was quite a skill to start the record at the same time and end it at the same time. Otherwise, it would be a horrible silence, rather like those satellite delays with correspondents we see every night on telly these days. It would be a bit like that.
We together have talked quite a lot before about the recent research that was done about what a particular presenter, what that voice means to someone. Can you tell us a little bit about the research? Because I know it really sparked your interest.
It was something I believed in all the time I was a programme director or a station manager or whatever. I sort of climbed the greasy pole fairly early in the 80s and started running radio stations from then. And I always believed that the friendship element of a good radio station with its audience was at the heart of what made it successful. If you were aloof and distant, you could be a brilliant technical person and really smart and your endings and crisp and blah blah, but if it didn't have any emotional connection, it wasn't really going to work. Anyway, spool forward 30-40 years. At the beginning of this year, the Pure Digital people, who make a lot of digital radios, did some research. And the figure was phenomenal, and it endorsed everything I've been practicing and preaching over the years, that 50% of people in Britain consider a radio personality along the lines of a best friend or family member. Now, that is extraordinary. But you've only got to go back to the heady days of Wogan and people before that, John Peel, Kenny Everett, personalities who were in your house and people loved them. And that carries on. It carries on in local radio. It carries on here on Manx Radio. There are people who have never met certain presenters, but they, oh, I love that so-and-so. I love that Sarah Hendy. She's lovely. They've never met you, but they have a relationship. How does that work? Well, the best presenters are honest. They're open. They don't sound like DJs. They talk about things that are important and relevant to the audience and themselves. They might talk about their kids. They might talk about the dreadful weather or anything that's happened. They'll remark on something terribly tragic, and the empathy will be real, because if you talk about something in a real way, it does communicate through this radio medium. So it was wonderful to see all that backed up. But 50% was a big figure, I thought.
Growing up, which presenters did you personally connect with? Who inspired you? Because although a few of us do seem to have kind of fallen into radio, conversations I've had have shown that we've all had some kind of special connection with it from quite a young age.
For me, it was listening to the pirate radio stations just before Radio 1 launched. I wasn't that old, but I had a little radio, and I used to listen to Radio London and Radio Caroline. Actually, unlike Chris Williams, Radio London was my favourite. There's a lovely story about when Radio Caroline are out in the North Sea and suddenly the presenters are looking out the window and it got a bit dark. Well, it hadn't got dark. The Radio London ship had arrived and blocked out the sun. It was a huge, huge vessel. And it did attract an awful lot of the top presenters at the time. Many of them went from Caroline to London. And then it was all over. And then Radio 1 was born. But then Radio Luxembourg, listening to this funny old thing, 208 Long Wave. And a musical number one in the... And you'd hang on to every word, hoping to hear what had become... And eventually you got it. And a true story, before I came here, I was actually the director of the Radio Luxembourg English service for 36 hours. It wasn't to be. So I came to Manx Radio instead. But it was quite a joy to have on my CV, director of the relaunched Radio Luxembourg English service for 36 hours. The reason it didn't work is quite interesting, because Radio Luxembourg, if you go back to me listening under the bedclothes to this crackly thing, was playing stuff that was not available anywhere else. You got a couple of pop records on the light programme. You didn't get any on the home service. There were only two radio stations, maybe a bit of shortwave from America, but you didn't get pop music on the radio. Luxembourg changed all of that. Now then, why would it exist today when you've got thousands and thousands of stations on the internet? You've got all your music on your phone. You've got your music in the cloud. There's no reason for Luxembourg as an English station beaming into UK homes. That was then. And I knew, actually, even though it was a very attractive package, and I thought, well, flying in and out of Luxembourg would be great, and it wasn't going to work. And mercifully, I didn't take the job for more than 36 hours, because I knew it wasn't going to work, and I came here and had a lovely time in the Isle of Man. I still think a good music broadcaster, a presenter of music programming, who can take you on a journey, introduce you to new artists, say, oh, I've just heard this lovely person playing in Jack's Bar down the road. I don't know if you've heard him, but I got him into the studio and he's really, really good. Have a listen to this. And if you trust me, and I'm saying, I reckon this person's really good. They live in Ramsey, but I saw them in Jack's Bar and they were playing down there or whatever. You will have enough faith in me, because I'm not going to play you rubbish. I've played some great music that you adore from well-established artists, and I bring along somebody new from the Manx music scene. You're going to give it a listen. So I think a trusted friend that role of trusted friend on music programming is as important as it ever was. I mean, John Peel was a trusted friend. Bob Harris for years. Johnny Walker. Some of the great British broadcasters. In America, they had their own. I mean, B. Mitchell Reed was incredible. Casey Kasem, to a lesser extent, he was more of a hit maker. But if you get to know that person, as we said, you don't really, but you think you do, and you probably do to a certain extent, then when they bring you something new, you will listen with, at best, interested ears. At worst, at least you'll be open to it.
How do you feel about the future of radio?
Now, that's really hard, because the Buggles, a million years ago, said video killed the radio star, and that didn't happen. Radio can't stay the same. It has to evolve. But I think the key to our success as radio practitioners is that anybody listening to the radio can do something else. You can drive a car, you can do some washing up, you can fix something, you can be tinkering away in the garage, you can have something going on, you can do some housework, or I can do a bit of... I quite like ironing to the radio. I always have that. Because if you're watching telly, you're going to burn something with an iron. It's going to go horribly wrong. And I do some ironing with the radio on. And I know lots of people do things with the radio on. So that element is really important. Going back to the surveys, the human brain is very interesting. There's an understatement. When you watch television, it slows down because all the information is coming at you, visual, audio, and you're comfortably sat down. Most people watch television sitting down fairly comfortably. Your brain slows down, you're quite likely to fall asleep, especially after a long day. You're very much less likely to fall asleep listening to the radio because your brain is making all the pictures. Your brain is active. So when you're listening to this, am I waving my hands? How excited is Mark Tiley? Is he going crazy over there? You got an image of this person, or if it's a radio play, you can hear the sound effect, you can hear this. So the potential is immense. The technology that we've got at our disposal now to make better radio is incredible compared to having to faff around with tapes and things that we used to have to how to create these things. It's easier, but what I urge everybody is to be even more creative. Don't just say, oh, well, that's easy. No, push it, because the fact that we can all do something else while listening to this guff is unique.
How do you feel about podcasts and the role that podcasts play in our daily lives in that same way?
I've been a huge fan of podcasts for 12, 15 years. A great friend of mine, we used to do podcasts very early on. We were early adopters. And we went through all the podcasts available. And I, broadly speaking, 99% are rubbish. There's so much out there that is dreadful. What is there is great. And guess what it is? It's good radio. It just happens to be called a podcast. It's just a word. It's good listening. And there's good listening and there's bad listening for every individual. Now, my good and your bad can be anything. But for me, 90-odd% of a podcast are just dreadful. But the ones that are good are fabulous. And they're really well thought through. They're honest. They're all the things we talked about earlier, but they happen to be called podcasts. All they are is radio, really. It was a real pleasure to be part of the British Forces Broadcasting Service for 28 years. It was a privilege, is the word I'm looking for. Because if you've seen Good Morning Vietnam, you'll know roughly what goes on. The difference between the American forces and the British forces radio is that in the British forces radio, we're all civilians. In American, they're all uniformed members of the armed forces. They have a rank, etc. We had an equivalent rank to enable us to move around seamlessly from officer status through to sergeant's mess and into the lads in the NAFI. But when you go somewhere and you're working with them on the ground, and somebody looks at you, and everyone's working with gas masks on. This wasn't me. This is a friend of mine. I'm not going to pinch his story. He sat there with his gas mask on, about to try and do a broadcast from the middle of Gulf War I. And a major looked through the door and said, oh, my God, if you're here, it can't be that bad. That means everything, that they look at you, because they know you didn't have to come. You went because you were going to get there and run a radio station in the middle of the Gulf War and do reports. Spool forward to the Second Gulf War, which I was involved with in terms of reporting out of that theatre. And you get the most incredible privilege of meeting people. We had a little lad who came into the station, and we'd done, I think we'd given him a job, and he came from a local port, and the whole family, these were people who had nothing, but would bring us dates and nuts and things, and just keep coming up to the British Forces station in the middle of a terribly dangerous situation. I mean, we had, I don't know how many people blew themselves up at the gates, you know, literally suicide bombers, just, I mean, horrible, horrible stuff going on. Another story from that era, the privilege of meeting people. We needed a new roof. Our little compound in the middle of this place, we're talking Iraq, by the way, southern Iraq. It needed a big roof to keep the heat off, because in the middle of the day, the temperature was around 45, 50 degrees. So it was unbearable heat. So to take the first sting out of it, you put a big extruded metal roof over your porta cabins, so it doesn't heat up too much. And the guys came to do it. We're all a variety of local people engaged to do this. And the boss man had this wonderful white dish dash and came up to me and said, you're in charge? I said, well, no, you're in charge. It's your roof. He said to me, do you have Guinness? I said, I might have some bit of Guinness. Do you have Kit Kat? I said, I might have some Kit Kats. Good. You, me, Kit Kat and Guinness at the end of the day, sit down and chew the fat. And he started talking to me about things, about life, his life, again, his family. And I don't know what nationality he was. I think he was Iraqi. But we sat down and shared a Guinness and a Kit Kat most nights until this roof was finished, putting the world to rights. And that sort of privilege, you think, well, where else would I get that? And all the time you're doing your work with the forces. But it was embracing wherever you were, whether it was the Falkland Islands, what the locals had to put up with down there, what they loved about being in the Falkland Islands. Make a quick documentary. In Bosnia, the same. Kosovo. All these places. So to work out of those, you were working with a very specific audience, the forces audience. But the joy of learning from everyone around you was just unbelievable.
How did you find yourself working in those areas and in that role? Because it's so vastly different from sharing your records with people.
I was working in a recording studio, failing as a rock star. And one of the other guitarists, whose dad was a brigadier, sent him a clipping, I think from the Telegraph, saying British Forces Broadcasting Service need presenters. And he said, oh, you've done discos, Mark. You might like to apply for this. And I'd been on the bit of radio, hospital radio. And I thought, well, why not? This band doesn't seem to be going anywhere. So I applied, and they said no. And I was so outraged that they said no. I wrote a really passionate letter saying, but I really, really want to do this. I didn't. I really, really, they wrote all this stuff down. And they got me a voice test, and I got a job. And only once I really got into it, I knew nothing about it, really. I'd heard Family Favourites and thought, I'll do some of that. Oh, I wish. It was so different. And it was brilliant. And I thought I'd be there for 2 years. It ended up 28 years all around the world. I mean, literally all around the world several times and to some extraordinary places. When the situation was dangerous or potentially dangerous, you had to be very, very careful. My first real sort of trip out to that was during the dark days of the conflict in Bosnia, which was horrendous. And this is before the NATO forces went in. This was under UN, and it was chaos. There were nationalities all over the place. Nobody knew what was going on, and it was absolute chaos and incredibly dangerous. Can you imagine sitting in an ordinary Land Rover being told on the radio, you weren't driving, you were being driven, that you can't go over that hill until they stop fighting for lunch, because they might shoot your Land Rover by mistake. So eventually, both sides stop fighting. Radio message comes through. Yeah, you can go through that valley now. They've stopped for lunch. That's how bonkers it was. And it's very scary. And I honestly, the idea of dying was pretty horrible. What was worse was the idea of getting very, very seriously injured and being an absolute liability to everyone who loved me. And I thought, you know, would it be better if it just ended quickly, then I come back in a terrible state and nobody can move on from what's happened to me. And those are the sort of thoughts that go through your head. but only afterwards. And you know what? When you're in a situation where you are working in a very, very intense situation, the flywheel doesn't stop straight away. You come back to England and your mind awareness training kicks in and you don't step off the concrete path in case there's a mine in the grass next to you. Now you're in a park in Chiswick, but you're still thinking mine awareness, and then you get back to normal. I had a guy came to see me and we were at the cash point. A car backfired, a military guy. He dived to the ground and was feeling for a weapon that he didn't have on him. And we were in Cheltenham. Right? So that sort of takes a while to undo the flywheel. But again, an absolute privilege to work alongside people who are doing things far more dangerous than jabbering away on the radio. Far more, and putting themselves in far more dangerous positions. It is ultimately an incredible privilege.
That concludes this foray into the power of radio. Thank you to my guests this week, Ben Hartley and Mark Tiley. You can listen back to all three parts of this series on demand or download the podcast at manxradio.com.
Yeah, I'm not